Welcome to a new episode of the Rebel Radio Podcast. This is Mark.
This is Matt.
This is Long.
How's it going, my brothers?
It's going good.
You know why I say y'all are brothers now.
I'm physically here, but mentally and spiritually, I'm not. No, I'm joking.
Well, you better be spiritually, because it's kind of funny, because last week, post-show, we were hanging out and talking and about how easy it is to become a minister. And then you guys, y'all went and did it. Y'all got, like, paperwork and became ministers. And it's funny, because I was like, y'all actually did it.
I didn't realize how easy it was.
That's right, brother.
I told y'all it wasn't hard.
Yep.
And it's funny.
Father Long.
And it's funny because...
Minister.
Minister.
El Padre. I started thinking about this, man. Y'all fit the stereotype so easily. You're like Hispanic.
Yeah.
He's like Asian. It's like y'all fit the... I have to fuck with y'all a little bit on that. But it's pretty cool, man. I'm kind of like... I'm the only one in the group now that's not...
So instead of Cheech and Chong, it's Cheech and Long?
Basically.
Yeah. I'll be Cheech.
So after that
conversation... I'll be Chong.
Well, you started it, and then Matt followed you. So what made you decide to do it?
I was just seeing how easy it was, really. And then, honestly, I did pay for the certificate and everything.
Yes.
But I kind of emailed them and said, cancel my order.
Oh, for real?
Yeah. It was $30-something.
Oh, just get the letter.
Yeah.
It's like, well, the letter itself... The certificate's like... The letter of good standing is like $8 or so. Uh-huh. And you can...
Did you get the card?
I did not get the card, and...
The card makes it official.
Yeah, I wish I would have. I mean, you can get it, but you have to get it in another set.
Did you look at the apparel?
I did. And I was like, you know what? Another time.
Yeah.
I actually have a friend that he's like, hey, I may call you next year. And I was like, oh, crap, I'm going to have to read up.
You get the black cassock.
Jackie's like, so how would you officiate a wedding? She's like, because, and I was like, well, I was like, see, well, you two, you look like you're ready to get it on. So by the power invested in me, I now pronounce you husband and wife.
To get the court documents.
Yeah. You have to, well, they.
The way it works is that you have to go to State of Texas, pay for those documents. And you have 90 days to turn them in.
Well, that's the marriage license.
Right.
But they have to get that.
You have
to turn it in, though. You have to send it in.
Yeah, the certificate portion.
Whatever. Yeah, so if you're late on turning it in, then that's on
they're
you.
Not
yeah, they're not married. And it,
you, they're not married? You should wallet the money.
Yeah.
It
costs nothing to get the...
So basically what they say is you're in charge of your own spirituality, and you are your own spiritual compass. So by that nature, you don't have to go through any training.
It's a legal thing in the state of Texas.
It's illegal, completely legal.
Send me the link.
There's two tenets, two absolute tenets of the church. One, you have to do good by others.
Oh, okay.
And two, follow the law. That's it.
You're going to have to send me the link. I feel like I need to be part of this brotherhood now.
Yeah. People use it to start their own church.
What's the name of the podcast? To the Brother Rebel Podcast? I don't know.
The Rebel Ministry Podcast.
Rebel Ministry Podcast.
Yes.
That's kind of
the Ministry of Rebellion.
Jobadiah.
So, Brother Matt and Brother Long, other than becoming ministers, how was y'all's weeks? Good weeks?
Yeah, kind of sound like Hulk Hogan there.
Did I?
Which I heard that they did a DNA test, and Hulk Hogan is actually none of these guys' brothers.
It was so easy to do, I forgot that I did.
That's awesome. And, of course, our friend of the show, Ming Chen, is a minister.
Yeah.
You know,
uh-huh.
So
I'm not saying it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I know. He wants to, but he
fuck Ming Chen.
And so is Conan O'Brien, apparently. Mm-hmm. Because I went and I researched, you know, how would you officiate something? And there's a video of that they have for their training video. And it's got Conan O'Brien conducting a gay wedding. And I'm like, huh, I didn't know Conan O'Brien. And he's like, yeah, and he's talking about ULC. And it's like 4 years ago. Didn't even know this thing existed. Yeah. I could have married my cousin.
Yeah, awesome. There's 20 million ministers.
Wow, 20 million.
There's going to be 20 million of one, because now I feel like... I want the card at least. I got to have the card.
Yeah.
I got to make it official.
It's only $3.
Yeah.
The card is only $3?
I think it was.
They make you get it in like a packet.
No, I think. Well, I saw it separate.
I saw it separate under church supplies. Mm. And I tried to log in to get church supplies, and it won't let me for some reason.
Perform exorcisms too.
Yeah, you perform exorcism.
Yeah. Well, anyways.
Yeah.
Well, so that's pretty cool.
I don't remember doing anything for download this.
No, I do. I did something for download this.
You didn't watch shit this week long or play anything? You slacker.
Oh, wait, Fire Emblem?
There you go. Yeah.
That's a very involving game.
Yeah.
The game on your phone, right?
Okay. No, it's Switch.
Switch. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, download this is where we tell people what we watched, streamed, played this week, checked out, consumed into our brains.
Oh, wait, and, I did play Silent Hunter.
I saw your tweet to Ubisoft.
Yeah.
At first, I thought you were going to say Silent Hill. Yeah. And I was like, there's been 5 Silent Hills?
Yeah. Well, yeah, actually, you're not wrong.
I think that sounds about right. I know they made a few.
Yeah. Silent Hunter's a submarine simulation game.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I'm just a military buff, as you may know. So.
So what did you watch, Matt? Is it something new for once?
No.
It's always old shit.
It's The Quick and the Dead.
That's a good movie.
It was on sale for like $5 or $6, I think, on Vudu, so I bought it. And I really like it. I know it's kind of cheesy, because, like, you know, Court, you know, gets his hand smashed, and then all of a sudden he can wield 2 guns, even though he's like, his hand's like, it's all looks like it's crippled. And then Leo DiCaprio looks like he's 12 in the movie.
Yeah.
And he.
I like the movie because he died.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. That's why I like
it. I don't want to die.
Good. Die.
And then the dynamite blowing up all the buildings. And then it's just a, you know, simple, entertaining revenge story. Entertaining is probably what I would use for it.
Unique, too, because the main character is female.
Yeah. Western. I've never seen a woman carry a gun before.
I've seen it once or twice. It's an okay film. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll give it that.
Yeah.
I think it's just one of those for me. I think, like, your age, because you're a little younger, you kind of watched it and maybe had it going back and seen some of these older Westerns yet, like we're going to talk about today.
Yes.
So I guess for me, I saw Quick and the Dead after I'd seen some of these classics, and it's okay to me, you know. But I could see, if you flip-flop it, how you might enjoy it more, you know. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I watched that, and I watched Big, because I had Jackie watch Shazam, and she had never seen Big. And I'm like, how have you never seen Big? And so we watched Big, and I was like...
yeah, I can see how they're moderately related, yeah.
Did she like it?
Yeah, they're very much related.
Well, I mean...
Like, there's a... Well, it's not tit for tat, but there was a lot of notions to... Right. To Big in there, especially the piano.
What was her reaction?
Yeah, but
she liked it. She found it very entertaining.
Of Shazam, though, I mean, it's been out way before the Big movie ever came.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah.
And then we watched Hook yesterday. It's free, and my son has not seen Hook yet. My oldest son has not seen Hook, so we had to watch the reimagination
I'm not a big fan of Hook. I thought it was kind of
Fuck Rufio.
Yeah. Rufio.
One of my friends back in the day when the movie came out, he says, "Hey, you look like Rufio. Shut up."
It's a fun movie to me. It's a fun movie. Yeah. And, you know, and everyone, like, after Robin Williams died, they played that one clip from the movie. When you gotta go, you gotta go. Or when it's your time, you gotta go.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I thought Hook could have been better.
It could have been better.
I've only seen bits and pieces.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I finished Stranger Things.
There we go. Good Finally, job, sir.
Congratulations. Here's your certificate.
certificate.
The season finale might be the best episode the show's ever done.
Did you see the post credits?
I don't think I watched the post credits.
Oh,
scene.
Dude.
God.
Can we tell you right now what it is?
Might as well.
Yeah, okay. So it looks like a Soviet facility, Russian facility.
Prison facility.
And he's about to open a door, like a cell door. And
one of them says,
not the American.
Yeah.
And so they go to the next one, and it's some Soviet dude.
Some prisoner.
Yeah, some prisoner. And they throw him down these stairs and lock him in this room. And it's a Demogorgon, like from the first season. And it eats him. Like, he's feeding him people. So people are speculating that Hopper survived.
Right.
And he's in that cell.
Survived anyway. Yeah.
I know they shut it down, but people started. Did you know that people started calling the bald head guy with the glasses.
Yeah.
Yeah, he started calling that number because Winona Ryder's character gives out the number.
Right.
And so people were calling it, and it has a voice message, and it's him. He's like, "Oh, you think you're clever because you're calling me, huh?" He's like, "If this is Joyce, we need to catch up. I have some news about our friend." And if this is not Joyce, then you need to stop calling. You know, you'll never find us.
Oh.
And stuff like that. So it's like news about our friend to me is Hopper. It was a working number for about 24 hours.
Viral campaign.
Yeah.
I didn't know it was post-credits scene. That's not real commonplace on television.
No, it's not.
Unless you're Rick and Morty, because every episode has one.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so I didn't know. I would have watched the end credits if I'd known that, I think, but just turned it off. So, but yeah. I think season 3 as a whole was better than 2, but I still felt like the first 3 or 4 episodes just dragged a lot. Like, it all could have been, first 3 or 4 episodes could have been like 2 episodes, you know?
Yeah.
But the last 3 were really good, you know, and it had a really, that season finale was fantastic.
What'd you think of Billy's death?
Billy.
It was, he ended up being a noble death in the end, despite his horrors that he was, but he was kind of forced to perform those horrors by the Mind Flayer. Yeah. So, you know.
Then you got to see his past.
Yeah.
You know,
game made a sympathetic villain in the end.
Who's your favorite woman in Stranger Things? If you could date one in real life, who would it be?
Oh, and
11.
No. probably Nancy.
Nancy?
Pretty hot.
Yeah, Nancy.
Yeah.
Mrs. Wheeler for me. Yeah.
Don't get me started on your affection for
whenever she's getting dressed and it's playing and she's playing I Just Died in Your Arms Tonight. Episode, yeah. A second. I think it's the second episode.
You can have that, but I'd rather have what's her name? Patriot Girl from Glow, played by Betty Gilpin, the blonde chick.
Oh, okay. Mm. Yeah. Mm. yeah.
But Stranger Things is good. I guess I still can't find. I thought they were going to do 5 seasons, but then I keep saying things. 4th is going to be the final season, so I don't know.
Yeah.
So we'll see how much further they go with it. But I think it's good. I don't want to take it too far.
Yeah, they said, what, minimum 4, but maybe 5? I think 4 is more reasonable.
Or maybe. I think the Duffer Brothers even threw an idea around of doing 4 seasons and maybe like a 2-hour like Netflix movie or something. I think I'd read that somewhere too.
Yeah,
that would be cool.
The season finale was an hour and 20 minutes long.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like a movie, so.
Yeah, how about that song that was sung?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, we got a little flack from our friends at the Home of the Strange podcast, Lindsay, for that one of us didn't sing the song or mention it.
I started singing it during the
Never-Ending Story last week.
Well, Lindsay, I was just thinking about that now that Marcus brought that up. But you have to wait till the end of the episode to hear it.
That was pretty funny, though. with Dusty Bun. I was like, come on.
Come on, Dusty Bun.
The world is in
now.
All the heck with it. Here you go, Lindsay. There is Mark flying through the sky with Matt flying under his wings.
I can't hear it, too. A little bit of a... Wait. Who am I flying under my wings?
Oh, Matt. Oh, Mark.
I'm Falcor. But instead of, you know, I do the Arnold voice the whole time. Yeah.
Meanwhile,
you're not a trio.
Lindsay and Sam are talking on their podcast, Home on the Strange.
That's funny.
Laughing at Mark and Matt flying through the sky. Longs at home, depressed as can be.
Yeah, depressed as can be.
He's sitting in the bathtub full of water.
I don't like where this is going.
He's gonna throw that toaster and shock himself to death.
This is very dark.
Story.
This must be the Never Ending Story 2 with that evil sorceress.
Man.
10 years later, Long is haunting the house. Lindsay and Sam are investigating the haunts. Okay, I'm done. All right. Thank you, thank you.
The evil Dr. Tran.
Ladies and gentlemen.
That was all.
It was right there. Pulled it out of his butt. I saw it myself.
Out of my butt. Didn't memorize it, nothing. It was all winging.
That's pretty good.
I tried to harmonize with you, but I didn't know what you were going to say, so yeah. It didn't work.
It's all good.
Duet, though. Yeah. And then I watched the first episode of The Boys, the Amazon series based on the Garth Ennis comic. It's getting rave reviews. I thought it was okay, but it's only one episode. I'm going to keep watching it.
How many episodes?
It's like 8 or 9, I believe, so it's not super long. It's the ideas behind The Boys is what if superheroes were run by the government? Hmm. Yeah, but they're not necessarily nice people behind the scenes. You know, they do some very evil things. People get caught in the crossfire of these heroes. They get killed. They're very violent. These heroes don't always think about the repercussions of what they do because they're getting paid big bucks. They're making money off of merchandising. Mm-hmm. They're getting paid by the government. So it's like, what if superheroes were run by an evil corporation in a way, you know, and they don't really give a fuck about human beings other than their fame and glory.
Yeah.
And so the first episode is interesting. It's very adult. Very, very adult. I mean, there's... first episode, you see dongs, you know?
Pass.
Yeah, you see ultra violence. But I'm going to give it a chance. It's getting like a 9.0 on IMDb right now. It's
wow.
It's one of Amazon's most watched original programs in the first 48 hours they've ever had. So it's people are watching the heck out of it. So.
Wow.
And it's already been picked up for the second season. So, you know. So I'm gonna finish it. I'm going to give it a chance. Because someone else told me, yeah, the first episode's a little slow. But it does get a lot better. Someone says some crazy-ass shit happens in it. So... I know and Garth Ennis is known for that. He did the Preacher comics. Oh,
if Garth Ennis is...
Yeah, he wrote the comics for The Boys, so...
I thought it was Warren Ellis that did the Preacher.
I think... it's probably Garth Ennis. It was Ennis did Preacher.
Man, Ennis is always known for ultra-violent storytelling.
And Preacher was on AMC, and they came close to crossing a line on AMC, but Ennis never felt that Preacher reached his full potential being AMC, and that's why he shopped The Boys somewhere else where they could do more with it, which made sense.
Yeah. Oh, wait, I'm getting that mixed up with I'm Just a Pilgrim. That's another. You ever heard of that?
Pilgrim.
I'm Just a Pilgrim. Yeah, it's a pretty nihilistic comic.
Yeah.
Post-apocalyptic.
But that's really all I watched this week. Finish up Stranger Things, watch first episode of The Boys, and besides watching the movie we're fixing to talk about. And how.
So is that your new word? No more YARP?
Nah. Whichever fits my mood.
I'm disappointed.
So
that's such an old saying. And how? Early 20th century.
Little Rascals.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Disney short cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, boy. So we're... we're going back to 1965 today, after spending some time in the
65 80s. 65 or 64?
Well, it was released,
depends on how technical you want to be about it.
I mean, it's officially released as considered 65, even though it had a very... Back then, things were different, because they would film movies back then. They would sit on the shelves. Even American films would sit on the shelves for 2 or 3 years before they hit theaters and stuff. So, and this movie was kind of shot, like, almost immediately... If you read the production notes in this movie, it made it sound like it took them forever to make the sequel. But essentially, it was shot almost shortly after a fistful of dollars.
Fistful of dollars.
You know, So things actually moved faster than they did back then. But it took forever for A Fistful of Dollars to hit theaters, and it came out like only 6 months before this came out in theaters. But the movie we're talking about today is For a Few Dollars More, which is the middle part of what's considered the Man with No Name trilogy, also known as the Dollars trilogy, which includes... A Fistful of Dollars, For a Few Dollars More, this movie, and the one people know the best, which is The Good and the Bad and the Ugly. All three really great movies, and we chose the middle one, no particular reason, just because it might arguably be the best of the three. And this is a movie that I think I first watched probably in high school. I would think maybe by the first time I watched this, it was kind of when I was discovering westerns. I think Tombstone had come out, and I had seen some westerns with my dad and stuff on TV, but was never a huge fan. Like, I never could get into John Wayne other than The Searchers. The Searchers is a great film, but overall, I never bought into his. And then there's this movie with this actor I know who Clint Eastwood is at that time. I had seen Dirty Harry and stuff like that, and I'm like, man, this is really good, and it changed my outlook on westerns.
Summarize the plot, Mark.
When I originally saw this, summarize this plot. Well, basically, Clint Eastwood plays Monaco. He was a bounty killer, as they call it, which is essentially a bounty hunter. Interesting terminology they use, bounty killer.
Yeah.
Probably probably something that the for the Italian and Sergio Leone that they chose to do. You know, is had to, I think that's what it had to do with the writers. Probably they never really I never could find an explanation as to why they called it a bounty killer. So he's a bounty killer, and he goes basically hunting for rewards of criminals and stuff back then. And he you see him take out a bounty early in the movie, so you get an idea who he was. Mm-hmm. And then there's this big reward that for this guy who's like a major
robber
and bank robber and stuff.
Indio.
And it turns out that Indio's kind of in cahoots with another guy who's wanted. But then he comes across another bounty hunter, who's played by Lee Van Cleef, who was a... General Mortimer, who's remarkable in this film. Lee Van Cleef just comes off the screen in this movie so much. And they decide to form a mutual partnership to go after these two bounties together because they realize how tough it's going to be. And it's a very fragile, you know, as you would expect for two bounties to be.
Yeah.
But, they almost cross each other a couple of times, but in the end, it essentially works, and they both get what they want. And there's a little twist at the end where it turns out that Mortimer is actually in this for revenge the whole time. That he was never in it for the money.
Yeah,
that
it's like his brother.
Yeah,
he's the brother of
his sister.
I thought it was daughter.
Oh, his sister. That was his sister.
Yeah, his sister was killed.
I thought he was the lover's brother.
No, it's his sister. He reveals his sister.
Oh, okay.
In the movie. Yeah.
That's why they lingered on her.
Yeah.
That's okay.
He ends up walking away with no money, and he lets Monaco keep all the money because for him, he got his revenge.
Yeah.
It's
a very great ending.
Yeah, very great ending.
Have you ever seen that movie before?
Yeah. The first time you guys would watch it.
I'm kind of like you. You know, my dad would watch a whole lot of Westerns, and it just kind of became background noise to me. You know, I'd see it on, and I would watch some gunfighting, but I wouldn't really pay attention to any of the stories, so I really didn't know what I was watching and who I was watching. So I know I saw it because, you know, my dad would always have it on Turner Classic Movies or AMC. That's everything that he'd watch. Him and my uncle were, you know, my Uncle Ted, a fan of the show. He's both of them big John Wayne and Clint Eastwood fans. Yeah. Rifleman. Paint Your Wagon. But this was really the first time I sat down and watched it and was able to take away, you know, the greatness of Sergio Leone.
Yeah, he's Sergio Leone he only made 7 films. IMDb credits him as 8 because there's a movie on there made up of commercials.
Fistful of Dynamite.
But yeah, he only made 7.
Ducky Sucker,
yeah.
And he comes from... And he's a guy who's influenced a lot of today's directors, from Quentin Tarantino to Robert Rodriguez, Terrence Malick, these guys that are...
And Akira Hapshido.
Yeah, Martin Scorsese is influenced by us. Yeah.
Yeah. Inspired him.
Yeah.
With the... Yeah.
Who all look back on Sergio Leone's films as influencing the things they do today. Like, Tarantino got the idea of only making 10 films because his hero, Sergio Leone, only made 7 films. And, some of that, though, was also not Leone's choice. He got sick later in life and wasn't able to make his many films. And he finished up. His last film was 87, I think, 2 years before he died. So it was hard for him to make films as he got a little bit older. But he did stuff in this movie that was unheard of in Hollywood at the time.
It's crazy how he made the film.
Wide shots where Clint Eastwood is miles away. You can't see him. That was unheard of.
Yeah.
When you paid a star, you showed their face. You didn't have him riding a horse and see him shoot someone in the distance.
Wait a minute. What about David Lean? He did that.
Yeah.
Way before Leone.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, but for some reason, David Leone, they only wanted to play his pictures in the States.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, they love David Leone's pictures. And it's funny.
Sergio
Leone. I'm sorry. Why am I saying David Lean?
He said David Lean.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So, but there are things that, you know, made this picture happen. Like, there was a Catholic holiday that came up, and, you know, Sergio he said that he was Jewish, so the Archbishop allowed him to film, and this Catholic company that was supposed to have a crane, you know, they weren't going to use it for that day, so Sergio's like, can we borrow your crane so we can shoot these shots that I need to shoot? Mm-hmm. And, yeah, it's funny just how everything came together, even though the budget was, for lack of a better term, a few dollars more than A Fistful of Dollars.
Well, just like two lead actors. And back then, you had a female lead and a male lead in most films.
Yeah.
You didn't have two movie stars in the same film. Very rarely did that ever work. I mean, you did have it you know, I know Alfred Hitchcock did in some of his movies, but it was still kind of not commonplace. The standard Hollywood quota was you had a female and a male actor with some supporting actors. You had a beginning and a middle end. It was all shot one way. And you started getting these directors in the 50s that were breaking the rules and changing things, like Hitchcock and Leone, and doing new styles and new things that hadn't been seen before. And Eastwood wasn't a huge star at this point. You know, he was a star from Rawhide and television and stuff, but he wasn't the actor that he is today in any means. These are the films that made him an actor. And whenever he agreed to do the sequel, he hadn't even seen Fistful of Dollars yet. And so they rushed a print of the movie to the States so he could watch it with a bunch of execs, and he even downplayed it. Was like, I don't know if it's going to be any good. You know, I haven't even seen it, because he didn't want to get their hopes up.
And yeah.
Then it turned out everyone absolutely loved it, and he agreed to be in the sequel. And, like, he flew out to start shooting, like, the next day, the sequel for the film. You know, and a lot of this is all shot in Spain, and it's a spaghetti western, which we talked about back when we did Django. That term comes from simply that a lot of these movies are filmed in Spain and in Italy. And so there's no real word for it. They just started calling spaghetti westerns.
Well, the Chinese started calling them macaroni westerns, and then it eventually turned into spaghetti westerns, because spaghetti westerns sound so much cooler than macaroni westerns.
Right.
At least that's what I believe.
And they use a lot of Italian actors. Interesting thing, and a lot of Spanish actors. Interesting about this film was all shot without sound. And almost all the dialogue is done in post-production.
Yeah.
You know, even Eastwood and the guys, they would speak on set their lines, but they didn't record it. They would record it all in later on.
That's such a weird thing.
And they were very fortunate.
Yeah, you're always, you know, you're watching an Italian movie when it's always, looks like it's all dubbed, even in Italian, in its native language. Hey, that looks, where are they dubbed in their own language, you know?
Well, let's backtrack a little bit. When was the first time you saw it, Long?
I saw it 8 years ago, really.
Yeah.
And, only seen bits and pieces, but I saw actually the Good and the Bad and the Ugly first.
And yeah, then, which I think a lot of people.
Yeah, and then I saw Fistful of Dollars, which I enjoyed, and then I saw For a Few Dollars More, which I enjoyed more. And I think of all three of them, I liked the middle one better.
Yeah.
And I didn't like Fistful of Dollars because I saw Yojimbo first.
Oh yeah.
Which inspired Fistful of Dollars, so I enjoyed the original.
Shot for shot, in fact, they sued Sergio.
Oh, really?
And won.
Yeah.
And it was remade again with Bruce Willis, Last Man Standing.
I didn't know back then they could sue people for similar ideas.
Yeah. The Japanese production company that made it sued.
Toho.
Yep. Yeah. Toho, yep.
Godzilla. Well, anyways, but let's talk about the plot. Because we always talk about these nerdy behind-the-scenes shit.
Yeah.
No, I'm joking. What did you guys think of the villain? Indio.
It's evil, man.
Yeah.
He's a rapist. Yeah. No one likes a rapist.
Yeah. Yeah. This is like, man, I really hate this guy.
Yeah.
This is like, I can't remember a villain that I hated more, you know, compared to like modern movies.
Right.
Can you think of a villain that you could hate more than this guy? I mean, this guy was pretty despicable.
Yeah, maybe the villain.
Khan.
Maybe the Captain of Pan.
Not even.
Maybe the Captain of Pan's Labyrinth might be the only other one.
Khan was cool villain. Yeah. Thanos was a cool villain.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, Joker was a cool villain, but this guy was despicable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was dirty looking. He was, you know, a psychopath. He killed people willy-nilly.
Yeah.
You know? Killed the family, basically.
Yeah. It's funny. You figure the way he was, he would have killed Clint Eastwood, but he walks up to him, even though he walked up to him and was like, well, I heard there was a bounty for your name, so I came over here to turn you all in. And he's basically like, if you had said anything else other than that, I wouldn't have believed you. And he still lets him come on, even though he's like, yeah, I'm going to turn your asses in.
And I just hated the way he laughed when his gang was beating up the two stars.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
It's just laughing, you know? Was it that dude with the hunchback, was he, was that Klaus Kinski?
Oh, let me check.
I know that guy looked like Klaus Kinski or Kinski. How do you pronounce that last name?
Kaczynski?
Maybe.
Yeah, Klaus Kinski.
Really? Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
Played Juan Wild the Hunchback.
Yeah. Yep.
Good it's call.
Like, yeah. I'm like, hey, that guy looks familiar. Is that the psychotic German actor people's always talked about? You know? They say Nicolas Cage is a Klaus Kinski of Hollywood.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. But that's like, no. Nicolas Cage doesn't fucking want to murder people on set.
Right. It's true. You know?
But anyhow. But yeah, that's. Mortimer was definitely one of my favorite characters in the mm-hmm. movie, and really the way it ended, I was not expecting him to just give the award up.
Right.
You know, it looked like he was driven to get that reward just as badly as
the whole film. Yeah.
Yeah, but it was just to motivate mm-hmm. his partner to work with him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and Lee Van Cleef had done some films and was a star in his own right at this point, relatively known. But he hadn't really acted much in about 5 years. Mm-hmm. He had done some TV work because he was having alcohol problems and stuff.
Was that whenever he was doing The Master?
I think so. And he was having some alcohol problems and was having trouble getting work. No one wanted to hire him.
Yeah.
And I guess Sergio Leone brought him in and liked the way he tested for the role and insisted on him being in it. And the studio kind of wasn't sure at first because of his alcohol issues and stuff, but Sergio Leone convinced him to be in the film.
That era of Hollywood, you know, that golden age-ish, it's like all the lead actors were always heavy drinkers. Mm-hmm. Robert Mitchum was a heavy drinker. Yeah. John Wayne was a heavy drinker. I don't know about Eastwood, though. I don't know if he was a heavy drinker.
I don't think Eastwood was, yeah. He was but man, Lee Van Cleef, in some ways, in this film to me, is a bigger star in this movie than Eastwood, because Eastwood does his thing. You know, he's got his chew and his crawl, and he's got that attitude about it. But Van Cleef just pops off the screen in this. Every scene, it's kind of a scene stealer because he's so good.
He's very charismatic,
yeah,
for sure.
Yep.
Like, when he's sitting down and he's eating, and he's like, well, I'll let you know in about 10 minutes once I finish this meal. But he's got, like, this glare in his eye, a smirk of, like, I'm going to kill this motherfucker, you know? And he's just, like, he's a total badass in the movie.
Oh,
And he is in all of his films. If you've ever watched Death Rides a Horse or Sabata or any other Westerns
he's
done.
I've never seen those.
He's just, he does it in every film he's in. He just has this way that he could have been a bigger star if he had chose to, you know. I think sometimes I feel like he got stuck in the shadow of Eastwood because he did this and The Good and the Bad and the Ugly with him, even though he's really, really great in the movie.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I like Lee Van Cleef, especially the first scene that I see him in, whenever he's tracking down that guy, and he goes to the door, and there's gunfire that comes through the door, and he's running off, and he's just calmly walking downstairs, and he shoots him off the horse, and then the guy's walking towards him, shooting at his feet, and he's just calmly putting together the stock on his Colt Army 1870 44 special revolver, and lines up his shot really quick and takes him out.
Well, in the entire film, Manco and Mortimer are like that. They have this coolness about them that even when they're getting beat up and everything and the gang is on to them, they never really give in. There's never this sense of fear in them. It's like they're calm, cool, and collective, and they have, like, they trust their partnership enough to know that it's going to work out somehow. Like, the only time you ever see Eastwood's character even look like he has fear in him is when Mortimer shoots him. And he gazes his neck, and he's like, what the hell did you just do to me? That's the only time you ever see his character shaking in the whole film, really.
Not going to believe you got out of this unscathed.
Yeah.
So he shows up, and they're like, oh, you left them for dead. It's like, hey, man, I got shot in the neck. And then he's just like, okay. Mm-hmm. I thought he was going to shoot him again there.
And I think that's what makes this movie so work so well. It's not just the direction of Sergio Leone, but all the great characters in this movie. You don't, like you said, the villain of Indio, you despise him, but yet he makes the movie interesting to play off of Eastwood and Van Cleef, because without that villain, he's just another cookie-cutter bad guy that you take. And you're right, in the first film, A Fistful of Dollars, the villains are kind of cookie-cutter in it. They're
the Rio brothers.
Yeah. I do like some of the humor in A Fistful of Dollars, which they did not put in this one. Like, I think the opening scene of A Fistful of Dollars is pretty funny, where he tells him, like, well, you made my horse mad, you know?
I
thought that was really, you know. And they do.
He's got this his little cigar. I want you to apologize to the horse.
Yeah.
I understand it's a joke, but the horse doesn't.
They do put some of that humor back in The Good and Bad and the Ugly. For a Few Dollars More is definitely the most serious of the three.
Three coffins.
The actor who was playing Indio was offered to play a role in the Good, the Bad, and the mm-hmm. Ugly, but he declined it because he didn't want to play villain anymore.
Right.
He was so good at it, he just didn't want to play
villain. Yeah, there are several actors that are in all three films that Sergio Leone brought back. Yeah. Like the one big guy that has the messed up looking eye in this one, he's in all three films.
Yeah. He went into politics after this.
Yeah, I saw that.
Really?
Yeah, he did.
I didn't know that.
He quit acting and basically went into politics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so he used whatever clout he had from those movies.
Oh, he got the clout after he, necrophilia.
No, clout, as in public clout.
Oh. Yeah. Oh. I thought you meant like clout media.
You're mixing that with chlamydia. I don't know
what the hell? I don't even know where you...
It's the Red Bull talking.
And the wacky tobacco.
Yeah.
Must be.
So yeah. Clint Eastwood would get these thin cigars like this, and he would cut them.
Cigarellos.
Cigarellos, yeah. They're very similar to Virginia Slims.
And he would wrap a lot of his own on set.
Yeah. And he'd cut them into three short pieces, so he'd have a shorter cigar. Oop, dropped it. But yeah, he had a longer one in Fistful of Dollars. Mm. I guess he got annoyed with it and went for shorter cigars.
Yeah. He's smoking almost every scene, and he also always has one hand on his gun at all times. Like, when he fights at the beginning of the movie, he even fights with one hand.
Yep.
These old movies are funny. Like, Michael was watching with me, because the movie's rated R, but it's not really a horror.
No.
Horror. You know, this would be PG-13 by today's standards. And Michael was laughing how they put all the special effects in post-production, so you can hear the punches smack, and they're a lot louder now. You don't have that now.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the stunt work is noticed. You notice that Eastwood's hand doesn't hit the other guy, but I think it's forgivable because the movie is 1964 or 65, and so you accept that stunt work and things are a lot different than they are now, you know, and filming techniques and things like that. And so it's, I think that's pretty funny, but every single kung fu movie back then had that. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, the smacks and everything added in later.
What was your favorite scene in this movie?
Actually, the very end.
Yeah?
I like whenever he's counting the money and everything, and he goes, the guy's Monko.
Oh, yeah.
So he's counting all the bounties. And he's adding up, he's missing one, he turns around, shoots the other, and he goes, oh, okay.
Now I thought there was 27, yeah.
And then in Mortimer's driving away, problems, boy? And he's like, nope, just messing up my count. That sums up the movie right there for me, their relationship.
Very cynical. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I really like that scene. The duel is great, but the duel's not as great as the duel in The Good, and the Bad, and the Ugly.
Yeah.
That duel is one of the greatest duels of all time.
Yeah. Very ambitious, yeah.
And actually, that place where the duel takes place in this film, and the one in The Good, and the Bad, and the Ugly, you can go visit in Spain. They're actually movie sites or tourist sites in Spain. You can go see where these things were shot.
Wow.
And you can stand where the duel took place and everything.
That's cool.
Yeah, and it's pretty neat. They kept it up all these years, and people go visit. Yeah.
My favorite scene is the scene where Mortimer and Monaco were sizing each other up.
Oh, yeah.
The hat.
And that Chinese guy. Oh, I go
ahead. Yeah, that was a good one,
the most
too.
Exaggerated dub. It was like, oh, my God, that's racist. I can't, no.
mine's the opening mark for Eastwood's character. I think it sets the tone of his character for the rest of the movie. He's like, I didn't hear you bet. Your life. He just beats his ass, and then three people show up, and he's like, you're gonna let Red go, and just pa 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 takes them all down, and then shoots him as he's trying to run out the stairs. And you know, kind of reminiscing of the comment he made earlier, he's like, it said dead or alive.
It's hard to pick a favorite scene because there's so many good ones. We have two really great actors sharing the scene together and some really great scenes. And we haven't even talked about the music in the film. Ennio, how do you say his name?
Ennio.
Ennio
Morricone. I mean, one of the greatest composers of all time. You know, the music tells a story. And that's something else, too, that these directors were starting to do in the 50s. Hitchcock was using music in a new way that hadn't been done to make suspense. And same with Sergio Leone. In fact, he made him compose the film before he shot it, because he would play it on speakers while they were filming, because he wanted to know what the movie was going to sound like.
Mm-hmm.
And the use of whistles and different things to tell the story. Every character has a theme. If you really listen closely, they might sound slightly different.
Yep.
Building suspense during the duel and everything. And then without that music, it doesn't work. And it's really, really good.
Yeah.
All three. And that is one thing. All three films have really great soundtracks.
He asked the orchestra to purposely play out of tune. Mm-hmm. And they played the lullaby from the little music box backwards, and I didn't notice that until I saw the trivia. I was like, wow.
The score in these movies, you'll love the score in The Hateful Eight.
Yeah.
Because Ennio Morricone has the score for that. And that's
he won an Oscar for it.
It's one of his best.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he had been kind of in retirement, and Tarantino talked him into coming out of retirement to do the film.
Yeah, I actually have that soundtrack on play on my Amazon Music playlist. It's a very, very good, catchy tune. You know?
Yeah, and I think that's a really neat part of this movie is the use of music in it. It's just so well done. Because and several different themes throughout the film are used in different ways, and it was different from maybe some of the John Wayne westerns would have the same kind of theme played throughout the movie.
Or generic theme.
Yeah, very generic. Or actually, see what happened, they would play it again. Yeah. But here was a guy who fully composed a set of pieces for throughout the 2-hour film to make the film tell a story that it's trying to tell, and it works in such a great way. And I think Sergio Leone, as far as the director, it's. I wish he could have done more than 7 films, you know? Because, like, Once Upon a Time in the West is a great film, too. It doesn't get talked about.
The Once Upon a Time trilogy?
Well, it's not officially a trilogy.
Loosely a trilogy, yeah.
You know, and it never gets talked about
very much. No, that's the No Name, Man of No Name trilogy.
Yeah, this is the trilogy, the Man of No Name trilogy.
Yeah.
Once Upon a Time in the West was a...
it's his own movie.
Was his own movie. Yeah. And then he did Once Upon a Time in America, which isn't really related to even Once Upon a Time in the West. Mm-hmm. It's has similar titles. And it's a great film, too. But people don't talk about it as much because they always talk about the Dollars trilogy, Man with No Name trilogy, more than they talk about
that. No, but they always rate Once Upon a Time in the Old West
as his best film.
Above the trilogy, the No Name trilogy.
Yeah. And, you know,
and I watched it. It's one of the best openings.
Oh yeah, I was just gonna say the opening sequence for
Once Upon a Time in the Old West, and then the ending, and then there's their twist on the character. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, and then the score of that movie was so good.
Yeah,
even better than this one. But I have to admit though, the one thing I really liked about The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly more than the For a Few Dollars More is the opening, the first 20 minutes really, when they're introducing each of the characters.
Yeah,
in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, and then the last 15 minutes of, you know, Good and the Bad.
Yeah, the duel's incredible.
The middle is, I don't remember the middle.
Yeah.
The only thing I remember about the middle part of The Good and the Bad is the train bridge being exploded. And
get the gold.
Yeah, and then, what was the guy's name? The play by Eli Wallach?
God, I know his name. I know him reading. I'm going to.
The guy's name played by Eli Wallach.
Well, I just remember him getting tortured by the Civil War general, but it doesn't really matter. It's not consequential.
Tuco. That's right.
Okay.
Tuco. I knew as soon as I saw it, I remember Tuco. Yeah. You know, Dynamite Entertainment actually did a series of Man with No Name comics that take place right after The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Oh, really? They're actually pretty well written.
Yeah.
Yeah, where he tries. I can't remember who wrote it. I have one of the graphic novels, and Dynamite Entertainment did them though, and it's basically Eastwood's character from Good, Bad, the Ugly, and he's trying to stay alive while everyone's chasing him for this gold that he got away with at the end of the movie.
Oh, really?
So yeah, it kind of takes place right after. But man, this is a really good film. I think one day we'll probably cover The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly on the show, because there's a lot of talk about in that movie, too.
I think Angel Eyes has the best intro out of all three of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it has Lee Van Cleef in it also, but playing a completely different character. And that's why they're considered a trilogy, because mostly because Sergio Leone later on said that, he essentially meant for Eastwood's character to be the same character through all three movies. And I think this is the only one of the three where he actually has a name, if I remember right.
Yeah.
You know, they because he doesn't have a name in Fistful of Dollars. And this one, they call him Manco, but even then, it's not really, you know, officially a name. Mm-hmm. It was more because the gang gives him a name, right? If I remember right. Yeah, they kind of just, or he tells him no, he just goes by it.
Yeah.
So. But no, it's a really good film. I like this movie a lot. I like this whole trilogy a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I could talk about Sergio Leone and his
directing. I definitely give it an 8.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's up there top 10, 15 Westerns of all time easily. Yeah, Westerns are an interesting genre because there's some that people, like, there's people that really love John Wayne films, and they might pick something like Rio Bravo as their favorite. And there's people that really like spaghetti Westerns. Just, you know, that, and so they might pick something like this their favorite. It's one of those genres, I think, that split people more than some other genres. Because Westerns, it kind of depends on the era you might have grew up watching them, too. And how you were influenced by people that might have had you watch these movies. You know? Because the Western is such a great piece of cinema. And they don't make enough of them nowadays. I wish more directors would give it a chance. But I understand they're not as popular at the box office.
Last thing we got was, what, The Magnificent Seven reboot?
That was
with Chris Pratt good. And... Yeah. Denzel Washington.
It had potential.
It had moments, but it wasn't. I did watch it. It was
the the fight scene was a mess.
Yeah.
Because you couldn't really follow
it. The last really great one was, I remember, Open Range with Kevin Costner. That's probably the last really good one.
I like the 310 to Yuma remake.
I've never seen that. I've always, it's
was Christian library. Bale?
It was decent. But it's not as good as Open Range. Russell Crowe. It is good, but it's not as good as Open Range. Appaloosa was okay.
I like that they have the Schofields, the old school Schofields. Russell Crowe's right-hand man got the break-action revolver, and he, like, just dumps him out. And I was like, I just like the gun elegance that they have in that film.
It's good, but I think Open Range is better. Appaloosa's okay, but I don't think he was as good as those two.
Maybe it's because he's a dad, and he just wants his kid to look up to him.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Paint
your wagon.
Hatfields and McCoys miniseries.
Oh, Hatfields and McCoys.
They had Kevin Costner and Bill Paxton.
Yeah.
That was really well done. That was on the History Channel.
God, I miss Bill Paxton.
Man.
That was an unexpected death.
Yeah. That was a good... it wasn't a theatrical Western, but still a current Western. That was good.
I'll always remember him in True Lies as the salesman. Yeah. Titties want to make you beg for buttermilk. Ass like a 10-year-old boy. Plop! Arnold Schwarzenegger... fantasizes about knocking his head off.
I laughed so hard during that.
Yeah. Trade secret.
Hey, your wagon's looking pretty sorry there.
Sorry, I thought I'd paint it.
So you gave it an A. I gave it a pretty solid A, too. What are your final thoughts on?
I give it an A.
For a few dollars more.
I give it
a few dollars more, would you give it an A plus?
I would for a few dollars more.
I think it's a pretty solid film. I think IMDb has it like an 8.3 out of 10. I'd almost say it's a 9 out of 10.
It's
pretty solid. From one of our great directors, and the
earlier film is what inspired the term spaghetti western.
Yeah,
it started this whole thing because there were westerns before it, but these were the spaghetti westerns.
Yeah, and there's a
lot more violent, more cynical.
And everyone talks about the Leone films, but there's a lot of other good ones out there. If you like Lee Van Cleef, go check out Sabata. Death Rides a Horse is really good. The Grand Duel is really good. The original Django, which we covered.
Mm-hmm.
There's a movie called Kioma with Franco Nero in it that's really well done,
they
too.
They Call Me Trinity.
Yeah.
So, comedy western.
Yeah, no, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
I'm the only one.
Blazing Saddles?
Seen that movie. And I wouldn't say that's a spaghetti western, though. That's a spoof on spaghetti.
Yeah, I know.
But westerns in general.
But if you have Amazon Prime, Amazon Prime actually has a lot of old school westerns on it for free to watch.
Yeah.
So, good stuff. So that's it for a few dollars. Well, let's talk some news, man. There's a little bit. We're gonna since we're talking westerns, we talk about Open Range. Kevin Costner loves his westerns.
Do you have one about Disney Plus in there?
I don't, but we will get we'll do it. We're gonna stick with this is movie related. Field of Dreams, which is of course arguably one of the greatest baseball movies ever made.
Yep. I've never seen it.
And really, you've never seen Field of Dreams?
Wow.
It's such a great movie. It's still the one movie. It still makes me cry.
I only know the stuff If You Build It.
It still makes me cry to this day. I'm not gonna lie. It's a tearjerker, but it's such a great film.
Oh, then I'm definitely not watching.
So they're gonna play baseball on the Field of Dreams next year, which still exists in Iowa. The family that owned the farm kept the field up all these years.
Wow.
It's a tourist attraction, and there's a small souvenir shop there. People can come play baseball and practice. Well, the Yankees and White Sox are gonna play there next August.
What? And
they're going to play a game there. It'll be the first Major League Baseball game played in
2020?
Yeah, in 2020, next year. They announced it the other day. Just, why not, I guess?
Why not?
We'll see if it's not a deal. I think it's kind of cool, you know? And they said there's already campaigning to get the guy who played Kevin Costner's father in the movie to come and throw out the first pitch, one of the actors. They're already reaching out to Kevin Costner and some of the actors from the film to try to get them to come out for it.
That's awesome.
It's going to be very limited seating. They're going to put in seats for only like a few thousand people. So it'll be a few thousand people who get to see a Major League Baseball game.
Well, should be televised, hopefully.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll be televised. I'm sure ESPN or Fox. Really, I think it's a really neat idea.
Yeah.
You know, and you can actually... It is one of the famous spots on Google Earth that you can actually look at the field on Google Earth.
Maybe the Cubs will follow suit and get the kid from Rookie of the Year to throw out the first pitch over there. And then the man. Yeah.
Don't compare Field of Dreams to Rookie of the Year.
What about Angels in the Outfield, sir? And get the Angels.
The Sandlot?
That's a negative. The Sandlot's a great movie. That's one of my
favorite. There you go.
That's probably my second favorite baseball.
What about the Benchwarmers?
That's a great movie.
It is a great movie.
Can we move on?
What, you don't like the Agoraphobic Brothers?
Yeah.
So Disney Plus, and we'll talk about that so I don't forget. Disney Plus announced a bundle with Hulu and ESPN.
Yep.
Plus for $12.99. That's actually a really good deal considering Disney Plus was going to be what, $7.99?
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. Hulu's, well, I don't even have Hulu. Was it $5.99 about right now? So that's a really good deal. And basically throw in ESPN Plus in there so you can watch your college football or what have you. Not bad. November 12th, is that the release date? I believe. So it's coming. Disney Plus is going to, well, you know, it's more sooner than September 12th.
September 12th?
Is it only, wow, we're only a month away from Disney Plus? I think November might be the Mandalorian launch, I think is what I wrote.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah. So I think it's September 12th.
Yeah.
So
HBO Max is going to have a DC Universe mm-hmm. under its umbrella with HBO.
I saw that.
Yeah. And the Warner Brothers Library.
Yeah.
I'm still keeping my money.
I'm going to do
Disney Plus.
Disney Plus I'm going to do, yeah. Because I've got to have the Mandalorian. Mm-hmm. And all the Marvel stuff.
I'm waiting for the action figure for the Gina Carano character.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
So,
the Black Edition.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, even though Marvel is using Spider-Man through Sony, they're going to go ahead and make a Venom 2 with Andy Serkis directing. Of course, Andy Serkis, best known for his stop-motion work.
Never saw the first Venom.
The Planet of the Apes films. You didn't miss much. It's not terrible, but it's not great either. It's has a very 90s feel to it.
Because it's made by Sony.
Tom Hardy is in like three different movies at once, it feels like, in it. But not to say Hardy's bad in it. I think he just didn't know what to do with the script.
Yeah.
Some good special effects and stuff in it. I didn't hate the movie. I liked it for what it was. So hopefully Andy Serkis brings us some better Venom too.
Clearer focus.
Yeah, maybe so with his directing. Because tell you what, if you've ever listened to Andy Serkis and watched any interviews with him, he's like a really fucking smart guy. Like, it's almost amazing. He's done some great stop motion work with his work he did in Planet of the Apes and Lord of the Rings stuff, but it's almost amazing this guy hasn't done more because he really gets it. Like, he gets Hollywood, he gets what makes things work. And so maybe he'll bring us a really good Venom movie. You know? Yeah. I hope so.
Yarp.
Yarp. There we go. He's back.
He's back.
Yarp.
So, in case, this is just a really brief news thing, but in case anybody doesn't own Star Wars on Blu-ray, or they want it digitally, September 22nd, they're re-releasing all of them with digital codes inside them. So, I guess it's a Disney thing, it's a cash grab, you know, but it's,
with
I don't know.
With the original cuts?
No.
No.
Nope.
And so,
the hell with that then.
Because they're available. You can buy them digitally on Vudu. You can buy them on Blu-ray, but you can't go in the store and buy them with the digital codes inside them. So they're re-releasing them with new artwork and packaging. I actually looked at them earlier. The artwork's kind of cool, but I already own them.
It's Disney.
I already own them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I already own them, so I don't need to buy them again. Yeah. So I just threw it out there.
Endgame's coming out next Tuesday on home release. I can't wait to rewatch that.
If the DVD comes in a really cool case, I will buy it for a physical copy, even though I pre-ordered it and got it digital.
I didn't buy Captain Marvel.
I haven't either yet.
Yeah.
I mean, it was okay. I mean, it had some cool moments, but
I'm waiting. If they run it like $8 on Black Friday, I might buy it.
Yeah, maybe.
So did you guys watch the Irishman trailer?
Yes.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, and it looks cool as hell.
Yeah.
Yeah, I watched it finally the other day, and I was like, I mean, De Niro, Pacino, Pesci, all in the same film.
Wow.
With Martin Scorsese, one of our great directors, directing it.
I'm interested in seeing Pacino being directed by Scorsese.
Yeah, he looks fantastic. It looks cool.
Yeah.
They used some de-aging effects to make De Niro look younger in it.
Yeah.
But this is classic Scorsese doing a gangster film, which he's best known for, mm-hmm. you know, I think.
I'm interested in seeing Pesci and Pacino on the same screen, because I've never seen them.
Seeing Pesci in general, it doesn't feel like he's done a lot the last few years.
Well, he's retired.
Yeah, he's semi-retired from acting and
He was retired.
So
they had to ask him at least 20 times to come back.
Pacino?
No, Pesci.
Pesci?
Yeah.
He wasn't going to come back for Home Alone 3?
No. Well,
Pacino hasn't done a lot in the last few years because he kind of got a little wacky. They said directors were having trouble working with him. He got an ego to him. He was doing these movies and stuff and being like kind of a bitch on set and stuff. And people weren't wanting to work with Pacino as he got older.
Yeah.
You know, so that's why he hasn't done a lot. You know, Pacino has done the Nick Cage thing. He's done some direct-to-video stuff. And people haven't really paid much attention to it.
Well, he's on Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah.
With Tarantino.
Mm-hmm. Is he in that?
Okay. He is.
Yeah, that's right. I did read that he's in it. So maybe he's making a little comeback now. Maybe he realized that, hey, I can't be a bitch on set.
Well, you know? I mean, he enjoys doing what he's doing. I think he's just doing whatever he wants. He's old.
Whatever he wants.
You know, when people get older, they don't care. You know?
Yeah, that's true.
So, in general.
So, the Irishman. In general. Supposed to be on Netflix in November, I believe. And limited
release. I'm going to see it on theaters if,
yeah,
if it's available.
It feels
available.
Like something would be worth seeing on theaters. So, Guillermo del Toro finally has his next project. First off, he got a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame this week.
Nice.
Very deserving.
Did you see his speech?
I didn't. You know, no? I didn't watch it. But
He held the Mexican flag.
Yeah, I did see the pictures.
And he said that he's an immigrant, and he has a success from his work, and we shouldn't live under fear all the time.
Yeah.
And we shouldn't be convinced by fear-mongering all the time.
Yeah.
So.
That's good, man. He's one of my favorite directors. Makes some really
take
good
it from
movies.
A director who knows fear.
Oh, yes, yeah. Yeah, he really does. In fact, he just had a movie that came out today.
Well, he didn't direct that. He just produced it.
Oh, he produced it. I was in our movie addiction group. I heard some people were getting bored of it.
Yeah, no, he didn't direct it. Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
Yeah,
he just produced. He hasn't directed movies since Shape of Water, but he picked his next film. He's starting production now. It's called Nightmare Alley. It's based on a 1946. Film noir novel that was given to him by Ron Perlman when they were doing Hellboy, and Perlman told him, you know, you should do this one day. So they've worked on the script. Apparently the book is really thick. It's like a saga, so they're only adapting part of the book, and Ron Perlman's going to be in it. Richard Jenkins has come back to work with him again. Michael Shannon's come back to work with him again.
Wow.
Cate Blanchett's going to be in it. So a really good cast coming together.
Nice.
For this film.
I thought he was doing The Mouth of Madness.
It's still in the back. He's been talking about doing it, but yeah. In the mouth, he gave an interview one time where he talked about these scripts he had done. Like, he had In the Mouth of Madness, that was one. Not really a sequel to Pan's Labyrinth, but like a spiritual successor to it, like another fairy tale type story that he had an idea for, and Del Toro did a whole thing where he talked about all these scripts he had that he was going to do, like his. And he has actually talked, like, one day he might release them in a book. If the films ever get made, he may just put his scripts out in books so people can read them, and all these movies that he never made. So I'm excited for that. I'm always up for what Del Toro is going to do next. I think The Shape of Water was a pretty remarkable movie, so we'll see how Nightmare Alley comes together.
Yeah. Crimson Peak was an interesting movie.
Crimson Peak.
That's kind of my most different one of all things. It's probably the least accessible in some ways, but still good.
Is it the sequel to Dante's Peak?
No.
No? Oh.
That's all the news I got.
That's good.
That's good?
Nope. Ron Burgundy was on Fallon a few nights ago.
You know he has a podcast?
Yeah, I saw. I've been meaning to listen. I haven't listened. It came out like 2 months ago or something like that.
I have a thing about, like, I like Will Ferrell. He's funny.
Yeah.
But I have a thing about these celebrity podcasts that are overproduced. They have commercials in them. I'm like, I want to listen to radio. Listen to radio. That's just me. You know, I like our under school.
Unless it's Kevin Smith.
Yeah, but he doesn't put commercials in the middle of this show. He puts one at the beginning, but it's mostly advertising his own stuff.
Yeah.
And then he puts one right before the Q&A session of the show, and that's it.
Yeah.
So he doesn't fill his stuff. And with over, you know, he's not selling out to fucking Oscar Mayer Wieners.
Oscar Mayer Wiener.
Bias.
Bias.
Mark's bias.
It's okay.
It's okay if Kevin Smith does it.
That's right. I like
Kevin Bernie Smith. Sanders was on the Joe Rogan show.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Joe Rogan asked him all the hard-hitting questions, and he answered them all. And he got, and that episode got 6 million views.
Wow.
Yeah.
But was it more than the Frog People episode?
Oh, are you talking about Alex Jones was on it? For 4 hours, was it? Was it a 3-hour podcast?
Yeah.
Fuck that guy. I'm glad he lost that case, that libel case.
I'm not really a Joe Rogan fan.
Oh, the libel case?
Yeah. Giving out people's personal information.
Joe Rogan's not the first person to get high and then tell you woke stuff. You know, Keanu Reeves did it all the time.
Joe Rogan depends on weed to function.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, Maui Wowie.
I didn't listen to the Bernie Sanders episode. I just know that it was a success.
You just read some shit.
Yeah. And while stoned.
While stoned?
Yeah. Because he looks stoned all the time when he talks.
Yeah.
Let's talk next week's film. We are going to do a anime class.
He's not funny either.
Oh, Joe?
Yeah.
No, he's not.
We are going to do an anime classic, which, believe it or not, The Evil Dr. Tran has not seen.
Nope.
I find that hard to believe. Well, that's okay.
Bits and pieces.
Asian joke.
Going to do was it an? I didn't mean for it to be an Asian joke. Why didn't you call me out like that?
Kind of was.
I didn't think of it wasn't an Asian
joke. It's okay. You can get away from it. Your sister's Asian.
That's true.
Yeah.
We're going to talk.
I kill you both. Yeah. You're going to die.
You're going to die.
Forgive me. Forgive me, Father Long. You know,
Father Long.
Brother Long.
Brother Long.
Minister Long.
But we are going to cover Fists of the North Star.
The earth lies shattered and broken. A ruined wasteland that is now struggling to sustain life. Humanity is near the end after a devastating global meltdown. The oceans have been boiled away in nuclear fire. The land is charred and disfigured, saturated with deadly toxins. Life is a nightmarish struggle. The radiation levels have created hideous, mutated human savages. Mentally deranged, they roam in search of food and water. Gruesome violence brings terrible death to those who encounter these murderous mutants. It is an orgy of chaos, madness on a global scale. Savagery knows no limits. There are no nations, no laws, no order. In this grim reality, the forces of good and evil are once more preparing to fight for the future of mankind. Far, far away, a star shines out from the blackness of space. A beacon for the lost, a symbol of hope, an unfailing comfort to those on a journey. Known as the North Star, it has, through the ages, meant many things to many men. Under this eternal light walks the namesake of this star, a man of power and purity. A living beacon of hope, destined to bring light into the darkness. He is a feared man, spoken of in hushed tones. A legendary fighter, able to call on secret powers. Violence is met with worse violence as Ken destroys the forces of his evil half-brother. Heads roll, bodies fall, and the earth runs red as Ken draws ever nearer to Shin's stronghold in the city of the Southern Cross. The scene is set for an epic struggle between good and evil. What Shin started cannot be stopped. Many will die trying. Many will run. But there is only one Fist of the North Star.
It's definitely in the 80s, yeah. mid-80s.
Yeah, it's an old school anime.
It's around my birthday year. I don't think it's quite 86, but yeah, 84, 85, 86, somewhere in there. Somewhere around the same time Cyborg
really?
Came out.
You were born in 96.
Because Cyborg, no. I think Cyborg was... No.
86.
Yeah, because Cyborg came out after that, and Cyborg was originally meant to be a live-action version of Fist of the North.
Movie?
Yeah.
It was, Cyborg came out in the 90s.
No, I was like, Cyborg was...
Late.
Yeah.
Early 90s.
Late, yeah. 89, 90, around there, because they used to set for Masters of the Universe.
Cyborg was meant to be a live-action Fist of the North Star movie.
Really?
Yes, but well, they weren't able to make it happen, so they went with a different way.
Actually, it was more they took, but they also, it was kind of a mix of both. It was also the Masters of the Universe sequel.
Yeah.
They reworked
really?
The script, yeah.
Jeez.
That's why if you look at the helmets and the uniforms in Cyborg, they're the same things they're wearing in Masters of the Universe.
Last of the canon films.
Ryan Pictures
yeah.
or something?
Yeah.
Canon Films or Ryan or whatever.
It was the last of the Canon Films. Yeah. I listened to that, shout out to Colt 45 podcast. I listened to that episode where they talked about Cyborg. And I learned me something from them.
Yeah.
I wonder if they'll talk about Fortress.
Oh, Fortress.
But so Fist of the North Star next week. It's going to be a fun one for you to watch. Long. It is on Amazon Prime for anybody out there who wants to follow along. And see it. You've seen it before,
yes.
Of course. And I've seen it. It's been a while. It's been a while since I've watched it.
Right.
I did try to watch it recently because I knew we might be doing the show soon, but I haven't. I didn't finish it. I only got like 20 minutes into it.
Movie night.
So I'm gonna rewatch it here this week and get ready for next week's show as we talk Fist of the North Star, classic anime on the Rebel Radio Podcast.
Yes.
But as always, go to rebelradiopodcast.com for all your podcast needs. Follow us on all apps. Leave us a review on iTunes. We really appreciate that. That helps us out a lot.
Do it, goddammit.
Do it. Just do it.
Just do it.
Just do it. Do it. Do it.
And Philly man.
And a shout out to our fellow Houston podcasters. They're going to do H-Town Podfest again this year at Bar Boheme, November 16th. Mm-hmm. So come on, hang out with some podcasters. One of us, maybe two of us, maybe all three of us will be there. We'll come hang out with some podcasters.
You have to drag me kicking and screaming.
Yeah, right. You're going to show up.
The hell I will.
Yeah.
The hell you will.
You can come hang out with hipsters and stuff. I don't know. Some of them might be hipsters. But they're good people. So some of our fellow podcasters.
Matt and Mark, flying through the sky.
Oh, Lord. This is the reprise. Yeah, we gave it to you all in this show.
Yes. Today. Singing, possibly dancing. Yes. You'll never know.
You never will know.
Yeah.
And a really great film and other fun stuff.
Yeah.
Learn how to be a minister.
That's right. Yeah. ULC. Org.
A little bit of everything.
YARP.
ULC org?
Yeah, ULC, United Life Church.
I'm gonna
YARP.
I can't have y'all being the only brothers. I gotta be a brother too.
There you go.
So I'm gonna have to go online and do it now.
Do it.
You know, everything that you do and the function of that, like if you marry people and you make $200, that's yours.
Yeah.
Tax-free, baby.
That's right. Awesome. That's how much our officiate cost, $200.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, I think that's all we got. As always, thanks for this Royal Podcast. This is Mark.
This is Matt.
This is Long.
And remember, as always, just preach the word and just go
there and do it.
Do it.
Call the police.
Hey, this is Marky Ramon, and you're listening to the Rebel Radio Podcast.
This is Ming Chen from AMC's Comic Book Man. I love Houston. I love podcasting. But what I really love is the Rebel Radio Podcast.